Company 1025, 1063 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Joined by TD, 4 o'clock, of course, it's time for the TD Power Hour. TD, I'm watching the video. Apparently somebody took a video. I didn't even know that the media, and I don't think the media took this video. But I'm watching the video of the Cam Ward interception to Cody Barton today. I didn't know people could take videos out at practice of things like that, but there's a video online of the Cam Ward interception. A little surprised by that. So,
yeah,
how are you through the first 2 days of practice?
Hey, man, you know, in heaven, you know, these couple of days of practice, getting to watch the guys do their thing. I'm not sure what video you saw, but I will say this. I talked to Cody Barton about the interception afterwards, and he said that it was a play. And this is where I like having a guy like Cody Barton be so willing to talk, because apparently what happened, he saw this same play yesterday, and he knew that Cam wanted to go to that particular area of the field. It was kind of like a seam route. He knew that Cam wanted to go there, and so instead of his little like hook curl zone where he was supposed to settle, he just busted his behind back into the passing lane, and that's how he was able to pick it off.
That, by the way, is something, that's why I think we see a lot of these joint practices, is because the defenses do know and start to learn the offense's plays. I do wonder, the first 2 days so far overall, I haven't been out there, tell me everything that's been happening at camp.
Oh, man. So you got to start reading the notes, man. You're once again showing that you don't read.
I actually have been reading the notes. I just wanted the listeners to be.
Yeah, no, you're good, man. You know, I got to mess with you. It's been a while since we got to speak. So, I think when you look at today, the defense definitely had a better day. A lot of it, they were doing a lot of like play action and just type moving the pocket. And I will say, when they moved to the offense's right, like every time Cam rolled out to the right, Femi Oladejo or Draymond Jones or one of those guys were able to get pressure on the quarterback. Now, that's not exactly all on J.C. Latham. Sometimes these guys were able to come uncovered, and it's like, hey, get the ball out to your hot read and make it happen. And that's what Cam was able to do a couple of times, but it was a little difficult. That pressure, they were causing some overthrows. So you had that. I think when you look at the secondary, their coverage for the most part was solid. Cody Barton, James Williams, those guys were able to do some things, especially Williams, you know, getting in the backfield and blowing up plays. Jeffrey Simmons had two what would have been tackles for loss. So today I think it's safe to say the defense won. Now, I would say yesterday it was all quick passing game, and that's something that Cameron Ward said he's really focusing on, just the timing and making sure that all of that is right. And there were maybe two or three passes that went more than 20 yards. Like, everything was middle of the field, quick passing, swing, you know, those type of quick. Can't really like describe the offense, you know, as much because of the rules that we have in place. But I'll put it this way. Everything was quick.
Do you think that the first 2 days have been a sign that the offensive line is going to be a serious work in progress
this
year? Because it does look better on
Jared,
paper.
They're not even in pads. Like, you know what I mean? They're not even in pads. You can't really.
I know, but Andre Dillard and Dylan Raiders were getting busted
up
without
pads. And I think it's safe to say, at least Dylan Raiders, he's come along. But I think it's safe to say Andre Dillard is an exception as far as like the quality of player.
He got worse when the pads went on.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, because that's because the physicality was introduced to the game a little bit more. And we know that he's not someone that embraces that. So, yeah, you're going to have that. But to your question, no, I there's nothing to worry about with the offensive line. It's still, like I said, they're not in pads. You can't really get a full eval on offensive linemen.
Who has kind of showed out so far early on in camp?
Cody Barton. I would say Cody Barton has. Tajay Spears is impressive. And I know, I remember back when Derrick Henry was here, you know, you and Chris and D-Maze, like, you guys would get into intense arguments because they insisted on how much juice Tajay Spears has. But he has that juice again. You could see it. He's very sudden and quick with how he hits the hole, and then he bounces it outside and he runs. And it's been impressive. So I say Tajay Spears.
Was he hurt last year?
Yeah, multiple. I mean, he had the concussions. He had I don't remember exactly what injury. I think it was a hamstring, but yeah, he was hurt. And that was the big reason why there was such an imbalance in the carries. And Brian Callahan wants to get that evened out a little more. And I think if you look at Tony Pollard, he had 260 carries last year, career high. And if you could just kind of take 60 of those carries away and give him the Spears, I think that's where you'll get the balance.
Who else has shown out? You know, the young guys, you've mentioned Oladejo, you know, of him coming off the edge. Mm-hmm. What have you seen out of him and some of the young guys so far, both offense and defense?
Yeah, what's really refreshing is the energy that Femi Oladejo plays with. And he's a guy that even if it's a run to the opposite side, you're going to see seven down the field trying to run it down, right, and try to punch the ball out. And there's a lot of effort with him. So definitely I have to shout him out for that energy and what he's doing. He's getting some pretty significant reps. I talked to Arden Key after practice today about it, and he was like, yeah, man, a young fella, like, he goes. He goes. And, you know, Arden Key is a ball of energy himself. So who else has impressed? Look, Kevin Winston Jr., watch out. Because if they run a lot of three safety types of defensive packages, I could definitely see him out there and having an impact, right? So he had an interception today. He and one of the other receivers, I forget who it was, they kind of battled for the ball as they went to the ground, and he wrestled it away. I'll say him. Jarvis Brownlee Jr. Yesterday he had a couple of nice PBUs, and then you know, he spit up after his second one. He and Traylon Burks went up. So, yeah, he's been impressive. That's about it. And remember, it's only 2 days. So,
you know, when you bring up Oladejo, I'm going to ask a really loaded question because I don't think it's completely fair to ask at this point through 2 days with no pads. But is there a chance with Oladejo that there may be a little Javon curse from the standpoint?
Don't do that. Don't do that to him.
I'm not going to say.
Don't do that to him.
But what on. I do mean by this is, Javon Curse should have been the number three pick in the draft, number two pick in the draft, or whatever it was. But the reason why he fell to 16 was because he was moved around so much in college that teams weren't sure at the NFL level what position he was actually going to play. Was he an off-ball linebacker? Was he a 4-3 D end? Was he an inside backer like he played at Florida? He played safety at times at Florida. With Oladejo, he spent so much time as an off-ball linebacker at UCLA that even though there was a little proof of concept at the end there when they moved him off the ball, or they moved him on the ball at UCLA at the end as an outside rusher, there wasn't as much tape. There wasn't as much production if he were to have spent 3 years, 4 years as a pass rusher at UCLA. And I do wonder if maybe he fell in the draft because of that.
Well, I mean, I think he fell in the draft just because the production and, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rawness to him. So that's pretty much what it is. I know down at the Senior Bowl, he created a lot of buzz as an outside backer. And I think, if anything, the Senior Bowl actually boosted his stock, right? Because I could have seen him getting drafted a bit lower because, again, like you said, there wasn't really a set position. But it's interesting the way that they're handling him as far as, like, I mean, yesterday I saw him, like, he dropped back in the hook curl zone, and Alec Iamanner was able to slip in there and make the catch. But, I mean, like, they have him dropping in coverage. Like, he's doing everything. And I talked to him about that, and he told me that the experience having played off the ball as a middle backer and seeing the full field perspective as opposed to, you know, a guy standing up, coming off the edge and you're just kind of looking at that part of the field, he said that's helping him be able to play faster. So I think that's a critical thing to look at. Me personally, if I were Denard Wilson, I would just have him, like, hey, go get it. I would use him a lot like the 49ers used Alden Smith back in 2012, right, where Parrish Harrelson started. He and Ahmad Brooks, like, they were the starter in passing downs. Harrelson came out. Alden Smith went in, and he almost broke Javon Curse's sack record for rookies. Now, I'm not comparing Femi Oladejo to either of them. I'm just saying the style of usage, that's how I would do it.
How have the rookie receivers looked? And let's add Gunnar Helm to that group too.
Yeah, Gunnar Helm, I was actually – it's funny you mentioned him. I was talking to him a bit after practice today, and I just, you know, told him I recognize the way he's so comfortable finding space in zones and finding those windows. And
He said that's a lot of film study and those types of things. He had a couple of nice catches. He did drop one, but he caught another one, and he trucked one of the DBs, you know what I mean? So you definitely have that. Io Manor is continuing to come along. Didn't really make a lot of plays the last couple of days. Chimere Dike, he struggled to catch the ball a little bit during individual period, but he was able to shake that off. And he didn't really make any plays or anything like that, but, you know, he's still someone that you got to watch. In addition to that, Xavier Restrepo. It's funny, I commented to, I think it was Ben Arthur I was talking to. Him. I was like, hey, man, you notice Xavier Restrepo kind of disappeared. Like, I haven't really seen him. And then he made a catch along the sideline. But, you know, a lot of his stuff is the short type of passing game. He had two catches, if I can remember, over the last couple of days. So that's kind of your rookie report, so to speak.
Speaking of rookie reports, the development of Cam Ward. Again, it's early. The education of Cam Ward. What have we seen, you know, from mini camp to the beginning of camp, and what's kind of next on the horizon for Cam? We'll get into with TD. So we'll do that coming up. And of course, we'll hit your phones at the end of the hour, as we always do. 615-737-1025. TD with us for the TD Power Hour. It's Stillman and Company on 102.5 The Game.
Obviously, you've been back for a couple of days, and I know you've been working out with guys in the offseason. How much did that help make you today? A bit more seams?
Real good. Just from understanding how they're going to run their routes, to them understanding, you know, my ball placement where it needs to be, allowed them to make plays up the field. But we got a talented group of receivers, tight ends as well, and running backs who can, you know, make plays in the check down game and in the run game. So, you know, just the pieces that we have, you know, I think we're one of the top, you know, we're capable of being one of the top offenses in the league.
That was Cam Ward yesterday. So, TD, where we sit now, you saw him in minicamp and you saw him in OTAs. Now you've seen the first 2 days of practice. Where are we on the development curve, the early education of Cam Ward? What are you seeing, and where do you see kind of the next steps for growth being?
He continues to be a work in progress. I think that's the best way to put it. And one thing that you have to do is you can't get too high, you can't get too low, right? He threw an interception today. Okay, cool. It was a play where a veteran linebacker knew where the ball was going. He went to it. It happens. And mind you, that throw was to Calvin Ridley as well. So we know that that's going to be a focus. But I think when you look at Cam Ward, the main thing, and this is what he said yesterday when I asked him about that transition to the league, the key for him is going to be timing, right? And so that's why – you see so much of an emphasis, right? Get the ball. You get to the top of the drop, get the ball out. But I'll tell you a good example of his development. And I touched on a play earlier, last segment rather. And it was a play where they had a combo where there was a clear out, and Io Manor was running a route underneath the clear out. And he didn't get to that window. Like the way his release was, he released a little bit outside, and he didn't get tangled up with Jarvis Brownlee Jr., with the DB. But he was a little late getting into the window because of how his release was, right? And Cam got to the top of the drop, and he looked, and the window was there, but the receiver wasn't. So he bounced a couple times, right, and allowed Io Manor to get where he needed to go, and then threw the ball. That's a good example of, okay, I understand the timing is important, but I got to make sure my receiver is there where he needs to be when I throw the football. Like, I got to make sure that he's going to be able to get there. And another sign of the development that Ward has, because we know so many people, you know, had the issue with he and Shedeur Sanders, right, patting the ball. Well, in that moment, right, where he bounced a little bit, he didn't pat the ball, and he still got it out on time. So there's those things. But then you still have to have, like, the interception that Cody Barton almost got that he dropped. You know, it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was an outbreaking route by the tight end, and Cam just didn't do a good enough job of looking it off, right? So those are some of the things that he has to do better. He's still adjusting, as he said, to the speed of these defensive backs and defenders, their intelligence, like how well they diagnose things. So it is still a work in progress, but to me, I think it's better. And Cody Barton said it himself. He said, look, man, if you're going to make the mistakes, make them now and learn from it. And I 100% agree with him. And my thing is this, you're not going to know if this guy, because I know you're very paranoid about him getting ruined by being rushed out there. You're not going to know. You're not going to know if he's ready if you're not giving him the opportunity to show you. So I think all of this is good right now. Me personally, because I know you've mentioned Tom Brady, you've mentioned Patrick Mahomes. Look, it's a case-by-case basis. I think that's really the way you got to look at it. You have certain guys in place to develop him that others didn't, and it's just a case-by-case. You got to just see how this works. But I would not – there's a saying, right? Scare money, don't make money. And if you go about this scared and you don't believe that your guy has the potential to be the guy and you don't give him a chance to, you're not going to know. So I think they're doing it right.
What have you seen as far as the protections are concerned? I mean, again, I know they can't hit him right now, but I do wonder, you know, about when he stands back there and they're looking at a potential blitz or something like that. Again, it's early, but how has he adapted to pressure so far?
Well, this is the thing, and it's a little bit different from Will Levis in that one thing you see with Cameron Ward, he's not going to flee that pocket early, right? He's going to hang in there and give things a chance to develop. And it's funny because as I said that, it made me think of something he said at the combine, you know, where people said he was taking too long to get rid of the football. But he's like, yo, I'm waiting for my guys to get open. Anybody who has a problem with that, like, they don't really know football. And I laughed when he said it. And I'm like, he has a point, right? If you're able to hang out in the pocket and allow your guys time to get open, I think that's a good thing. And that's what he's gotten. I mean, there has been pressure, you know, but I think you look at it, and the running backs have done a solid job picking up the pressure. Cameron Ward himself, he said it. He said that, you know, he has to get better with the slide protection and making sure that, you know, the running back is there to, you know, in place and to help the running backs out to pick up the blitz. And it actually happened. Roger McCreary came, and he was able to get in the backfield. And it was one of the ones where he probably, Cam Ward, should have seen, you know, he saw it, but he should have made an adjustment. Hey, you know what, get the running back from the left side to the right side where the pressure is coming. That way you can meet it right then and there. So, I mean, those are some of the things with the pressures. But like you said, look, they're going to be on the pads next week. That's when you'll really be able to see how this protection and how everything is developing.
As far as a rookie quarterback being able to diagnose pressure and diagnose what the defense is doing to him pre-snap, how much can a rookie quarterback really be expected to know or to understand?
Well, this, again, is something that's all situational on a case-by-case basis. Let me say this about Cameron Ward, okay? When he was in fifth grade, you know the Houston Gamblers?
XFL?
Yeah. His dad had him learn that playbook, right? So we're not talking about a guy who's necessarily brand new to all of this stuff. He's been indoctrinated. You know, a lot of people don't realize his dad was a quarterback at Houston for a brief time. You know, so it's been something that's an ongoing process. This young man has played 50-plus games in college, right? So it's pretty clear that he has seen a lot. I'm not going to say he's seen it all, but he's seen a lot. So I don't think it's too much to expect him to be able to recognize the things that are going to come his way.
How different is it from high-level college to the NFL for as far as, like, what these defensive coordinators are trying to do? I mean, these high-level college defensive coordinators are making $2 million to be college defensive coordinators. Mm-hmm. We know, like, Nick Saban, for instance, was a great defensive coach, you know, and when teams would play him. So how complex is a college defense to what Cam is going to see in the NFL?
Well, I think a lot more of it is you got the X's and O's and you got the Joes. I think more of it is the Joes, but here's the thing. It's so interrelated, right? Because if you have a safety that is super rangy, like you could do a few more things where like you could show, you could disguise, right? You could have him down in a box and rotate that into a cover one into a cover two, right, with him sprinting to the back half of the field and having that cover. So I think it's both things. The defenses are a little more complex because there are better players and you could do more things with them. But at the same time, it really boils down to the players. And that's what Ward said, right? I have to get used to the speed of these defenders. Case in point, I can't put as much on loft on the deep pass as I may have done in college. I got to get used to how these guys read things and react so much quicker. So I think all of that is a thing. And then also the spacing, right? The hash marks are wider in college as opposed to the NFL. And so what ends up happening is like you could have the ball spotted on the right hash, and guess what? You've got a whole field side of – or you know, there's a whole wide side of the field that you could take advantage of and spread things out more. It's not like that in the NFL. So there's a collection of things, and it's always a process, right? It's going to take guys a bit to adjust, but – I think, you know, the adjustment of Cameron Ward is going to be an interesting study.
You know, I asked Jordan Rodgers one time, we were talking about Josh Heupel's offense at Tennessee, and I was like, could that work in the NFL?
I don't think
And so. He was like, no. He was like, because the hash marks are too tight, and he's like, all they do at Tennessee is they just spread you out, and then you just say, okay, like, we're going to throw it, we're going to bomb the ball deep, and we're going to take the best matchup because nobody can play man for man with five guys in college football. And he's like, get to the NFL, they can play man for man with five guys, and it's not the same. And I think that was a moment where I realized, like, okay, it's just the bigger, stronger, faster really is probably the toughest part for a young player to react to, is the game is tighter because of those hash marks, but also because the bodies are bigger, but there's less room to operate with because the guys are more athletic.
Yeah, the guys are much more athletic, so it's a lot harder to be able to do some of the things that you did in college. I mean, think about it, right? There, when he played, I don't know, Louisville, we'll use your school for example.
Sure.
Right? I mean, obviously Quincy Riley, who, by the way, my guy, he just got his first interception today. Shout out Quincy Riley, picking up Spencer Rattler in New Orleans. But you have Riley, and then on the other side, or like his backup maybe, is a guy who this year is selling insurance, right?
Right.
It's different from college to the NFL. And actually,
right, like Louisville's best pass rusher was Austin Gelati, who was a good pass rusher.
He was nice.
He went to the Chiefs, I think, in the third round. But it's not the same as what they're going to see with Denver with Zach Allen and Nick Bonino and those kind of guys.
Right, exactly. I saw him train. He was down at Exos in Dallas. I got to meet him, man. A pretty cool young fella, man.
He's a good player,
yeah.
But he's not, again, he's
no,
not what you're going to see.
Yeah,
he's not Jared Verse in week two with Braden Fisk against the Rams.
Nah.
6'1". Did you see what Teron Armstead said about Jared Verse?
Yeah, he didn't want to see that young fella, man.
He was like, the one thing I'll say about being retired is I don't have to play against that young guy anymore.
I don't blame him.
615-737-1025. We'll hit your phones at the end of the hour with TD, as we always do. What did TD make of the expectations that were laid out by Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi? We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman & Company, TD Power Hour, 1025, 106 for the game.
Last three questions right here, guys.
Simple question. The team you put on the field tomorrow, can that team win the Super Bowl?
Listen, we have here. That's always the goal every year.
Yeah.
We also realize we have a lot of work to do on this roster.
Okay, there you go, TD. The goal is to win the Super Bowl this year for the Titans.
What do you want the man to say?
I don't think they're probably – I mean, could it have been answered better? I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I thought that was – they got their point across, I think, on Tuesday, which was – like, hey, this team is a serious work in progress, which we all knew and we all get it and we all. So what did you think about them kind of laying out expectations for the fans, and also the message that may send to the locker room when they talk about all the work that needs to be done, the patience that needs to be had? And while it's the goal to win the Super Bowl, there is a lot of work to be done on this roster.
Yeah, I think controlling the message and managing the expectations is really important. And it's something that they didn't do well last year. And it goes beyond the check all the boxes quote that you like to use. I think it just is an organization. Like, they sold a lot of false hope. And obviously the different moves and things would make you think, like, hey, they're going to win some games. No one thought Will Levis would have some of the colossal mistakes that he had. So I think they're doing a good job this year. Like, hey, look, man, like, this really is a rebuilding process. But the thing is, knowing that, that's why I made sure and asked the question, okay? I understand the patience that you're preaching and that you want everybody to have. But how does that apply to Brian Callahan, right? Because it's very important that they give him a chance to get things right. And I'm not saying that to try to buy him more time or anything like that, because look, man, like if it's just to the point where it's just god awful, then you got to do what you got to do, right? What I'm saying is if there are signs of life and you see some improvement, mainly in your quarterback showing that he's someone that could lead this organization, then you got to give the man time. And it's going to be important not to be reactionary, right? This team, if they win 5 or 6 games, I think that's a progression, and that's something that to not be happy with, but to say, okay, the next step, we need to compete for the division. What moves do we have to do to compete for the division? I think that's the way that they have to look at it. And if they do it that way, as opposed to, oh, man, we just got to blow it up, I don't think restarting is a good thing.
What did you think about the way that they really, both Borgonzi and Brinker, supported Callahan? To your point about your question, I mean, they really, really supported Callahan. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday. And some people will say, well, what are they going to say because he's their coach for right now? But it really felt like, man, they really are in on Callahan without saying, like, yeah, he's for sure our guy of the future as well.
Yeah. So with that, right, here's the thing, man. I think when you look at the way this thing works, Cameron Ward is, he's the catalyst for everything. So I think it's almost like the paradigm shifted in that, okay, we got to make sure that we're doing everything that's conducive to Cameron Ward finding success, right? And so I think that's why Callahan may have a little bit more time, so to speak. But at the same time, there has to be a progression. You know, there's expectations that have to be met. So I think that's the way you look at it. I think the support is definitely for Callahan. And it's actually for, just like I said, making things better for their quarterback. But here's the other thing, Jarrett, right? If you look at this, let's say you fire Callahan. Well, you know what? Guess who's on the grill? Mike Borgonzi is next up on the grill, right? So there's a timeline that is in place and just kind of an order of waiting to be the guy that's on the hot seat.
Do you think that when they get up there and they have a press conference and they talk about patience and they talk about the work that needs to be done on the roster, do you think that they are saying this to the fans because, hey, fans, we want you to know, we want to shoot you straight, we want to be honest with you? Or do you think that this is almost reinforcing what they're telling Amy privately, that they want to make sure that she knows? So it's like, we're not even selling false hope to the fans that Amy could latch on to as like, hey, Amy, if we win 4 games this year, like this, we are expecting to be bad. Like, don't fire us if we win 4 games.
I think they're preaching patience to her. And if anything, like, she's the one that the message has to go to the most, right? Let's say the Patriots come in here and they walk the dog. Like, they beat the brakes off of the Titans. And Mike Vrabel walks out of here with a victory. And it's going to be – there's going to be a strong temptation for her to let the coach go, right? So, but she has to use more discernment and patience and not make a rash decision. So I think they are preaching that to her. Just getting her to understand, look, it's a process, and it's going the right direction. And I think in their mind, when that stadium opens in 2027, in February, I think they should be in place to have a competitive team.
Speaking of the Patriots, did you hear what their issue at Patriots practice was yesterday?
No, what was? I heard Vrabel getting on one of the reporters, but
he did get on the reporter. But the issue at practice apparently was pass protection, and Will Campbell got beat for a sack, and Morgan Moses got beat for a couple of sacks, and Vrabel took Morgan Moses out and put in the backup right tackle, and then put Morgan Moses back in. So Vrabel's already got pass protection issues.
Yikes.
Well, I mean, hey, Jason Hodling will fix it, I promise.
But again, you know, they're not in pads, so make of it what you want. But I wouldn't – I'm just other school. Like, I just stay even keeled, man. Like, I'm not going to get too high on anything, too low on anything. It just kind of is what it is. You look at it, and you see how it goes the next day, man.
I disagree. When I heard they had pass protection issues in New England, I was like,
So you think it's a big deal they have pass protection issues when the offensive linemen, the D line, they're not in pass. And what are the pass protection issues?
Big picture? No. But as far as laughing about it, because, oh, the great Mike Vrabel's having pass protection issues, who could have seen that coming? That I do enjoy.
Hmm. Okay.
I will say this, though. Do you remember Ola Adeniyi when the Titans were trying out Dylan Raiden's and Kittle Lamb at right tackle without the pads on? And Ola Adeniyi was just killing smoking him.
Actually, we watched the practice together, and I turned to you. I said, do you see the way Dylan Raiden's is getting smoked? We were at the practice.
So that's the one thing I do say about the offensive lineman without pads on, because every time, you know, all the offensive line looks bad without pads, the coach immediately always says, well, they hadn't even put the pads on yet. And they only wear the pads like 10 days out of the entire training camp anyways.
Right.
But
the days, count, the things that count, the games, they got the pads on.
Oh, they got the pads then. But again, like when you see Ola Adeniyi, who is like an okay player. Like, when you see him just smoking somebody off the edge, like, that's when it's like, it don't matter if you're wearing pads or not. Like, that's...
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, when it's just completely lopsided, yeah, I mean, for sure. But is that the case every time, right? And you're pointing out one time a rookie got beat, Will Campbell. It happens, man. Like, it happens.
Well, he's got the short arms. Which, by the way, I'm surprised Vrabel's letting him play left tackle, because they wouldn't let Peter Skoronski play left tackle.
Again, and this is what you got to stop doing. You don't just – it's a case-by-case thing, right? Just every guy with short arms is not going to be evaluated the same. You know what I mean?
Do you think Skoronski could have played tackle?
He probably could have. Now, how well, I don't know. Because remember, one of the things that was a bit of an issue with Skoronski early was the footwork, right? Yeah. Will Campbell is a bit of a better athlete than Skoronski is. It's different prospects, although they have one trait that's the same.
Skoronski has the biggest feet I have ever seen in my entire life. It's like Shaquille O'Neal's feet. You know,
well,
I don't know.
Those feet worked towards the end of the season. He developed into a pretty solid offensive lineman.
Have you ever been to the NBA store in New York?
Yes.
So I remember when I was a kid, I went into the NBA store, and they have this like this footprint, and it's like, this is so-and-so's, like, this is Michael Jordan's foot, this is Kobe Bryant's foot, and then it's like, this is Tim Duncan's foot, this is Shaquille O'Neal's foot, that. And you, like, put your foot in it, and you see how small your foot is compared to Shaq's. That is Peter Skoronski's foot. He's got Shaquille O'Neal, like, size feet. All right, TD takes your phones next. 615-737-1025. That's next. 615-737-1025. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106 of the game. TD with us for the TD Power Hour. Hey, this September, Tim McGraw will be performing at Trinex's Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. TD, do you have a thought, or do you want to go right to the phones?
I do have a thought, man. Brian Callahan hat on backwards.
It
bothered you that much?
Yes, turn that cap around.
Ooh, well, wasn't it Colin Cowherd had the issue with one of the quarterbacks doing that, right?
I think it was Carson Wentz.
Yeah. I know that's your guy, so yeah, I get the correlation.
So it's funny because I actually asked ChatGPT, I said, why does it bother me that in a video the Titans put out head coach Brian Callahan has his cap on backwards? Why am I perturbed that the coach would have his hat on backwards? And ChatGPT said, it bothers you because it feels like it violates what you subconsciously expect from a head coach, where leadership, image, and authority are part of the job, not the same vibe as a guy tossing a Frisbee at the tailgate. I said, yes,
Lord,
that is it. By the way, what'd you think of the speech Callahan gave?
I'm not a big rah-rah speech guy, you know what I mean? You're talking to someone who pregame listened to Aaliyah, One in a Million, Brian McKnight, Crazy Love, Tony, just me and you. Like, I'm not a big rah-rah guy, so you're asking the wrong person.
I believe in this team. That said, phone lines are by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Adam in Portland is up next. Adam, you're on with TD. Thank you for calling. You go ahead.
TD, I'm glad you got to check him out, man. I got a 7-year-old. And he'll get to see his first Titans game this year. I've taken him to a lot of Preds games. Mm-hmm. Week 2 against the Rams is the first Titans game. And I'm curious how I could get him into it. Because when I was introduced to the Titans, we had Steve and Eddie. Like, you could pick so many dudes to get you fired up. Steve, Eddie, even Bruce, Javon, Blaine Bishop, Samari. There's nobody on this team that gives me those feelings. And I'm trying to find somebody to be like, hey, here's our guy. Maybe Cam, but I'm wanting to see if you see anybody that's like, a 7-year-old would love this guy. Like, I got one shot, man. I got an opportunity to get him into football. And so I wanted to see your thoughts on it, who I could.
I tell you, you know, Adam, one guy that I would point to, obviously, is Cam, but one guy that I would point to two, and I'm just going to point to one. Calvin Ridley is the one that I would point to. And if I were you, I would tell him, I would say, son, this is an example of how you make sure that everything you do is with the utmost effort and like it's the last time you're ever going to get to do it. That's every rep that Calvin Ridley has. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Look, man, like I've seen Steve Smith, Anquan Boldin, Alshon Jeffrey. I've seen, there's a pretty good list of receivers that I've seen. I've never.
A.J. Brown.
A.J. Yeah, right. How could I forget one of my favorites? I've never seen a guy practice with the same level of urgency that Calvin Ridley practices with and that he plays with.
The Titans put out last year where Chris Harris went up to Calvin Ridley at practice and said, in my entire career of coaching, I've never seen a guy that works as hard as you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, so, everything is full, like, everything.
I will say this, though, in regards to that question. I mean, you're talking about comparing a team that went to the Super Bowl in their first year to a team that won 3 games last year. Like, the team that goes to the Super Bowl is going to have better players on it.
Like, yeah, but, I mean, look, like, I get that, but this is the situation that Adam's in. Like, he wants his son to buy in, and he's like, hey, man, like, who could I get him to hook into? And, like, for me, you know, to this day, I'm a Mets fan, right? 83, Darryl Strawberry. I saw him on the cover of the Daily News MLB preview, and it was a cartoon. I'm like, oh, this dude, a cartoon, and he got a cool name, and then watched him, and he was good, and boom. So there is, you know, one player could really hook you in and get you locked in as a fan for life.
Andy says, TD, it's looking like Treylon Burks may be the odd man out, but with his size, would it not be smart to give him a chance at tight end? And that way they could use him before they lose him.
No, and it's, you know, I get the comment, but there's a different level of physicality that's required to play tight end. I mean, you're banging with the linebackers, the ends. Like, no, I wouldn't do that. I think Burks may end up making the roster. Bryce Oliver, to me, is going to be on there, but I wouldn't be surprised if Burks makes it.
I think it's more likely than not that Burks makes the team.
Yeah.
Because that's $2.6 million guaranteed, and the Titans don't like flushing away that kind of money.
And, I mean, he's a good deep threat. He's had a couple nice deep catches. I mean, look at the one against the Chargers. He had a couple years ago. You got the one in the Packers game in Green Bay. You got the Bengals one. Like, he's had some pretty significant catches.
I heard Brian Callahan answer today about Treylon Burks, which was basically like, I like everything Treylon does. I like what he's about. But at the end of the day, he's got to produce, which kind of sounded like, you know, he's got the right attitude and he's what we want. Like, he does what we want him to do. We just need him to stay healthy and catch the ball when it's thrown his way.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I asked him straight up. You know, I say, look, man, like Mike Bergonzi said that you reported to shape really well and he commended you. We've heard that 3 years in a row, Treylon. Like, what's going to make this year different? And he did hint on being healthy, but he also said, and to his point, right, when you end up having to experience the lows, like it helps reveal some things. And sometimes, you know, it prepares you for that climb to the peak. And I think that's what he's looking at now. But, man, like that climb is going to be a really big one. And, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't expect too much out of bro. I'm just going to keep it 100. I don't really expect too much out of him. But if they're able to get it, then that's great for them.
I had an executive in the NFL tell me that when Burks was coming out of Arkansas, that they scouted him and that they felt like the way his body just, like the way he's like biomechanically engineered, that his body is prone, especially in the knees, to injury.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. He's a very violent runner. So, I mean, yeah, that is definitely a good point. And that's something I remember Alshon Jeffrey That's something that he had issues with. But then he got with a guy out of Washington, and he learned how to – like, he redid his body composition, but then he also learned how to run, like, not as violently. And believe it or not, the only injury he had that year was when he dove and landed on the shoulder. Mm.
One texter says, TD, did something change with the Titans' perspective of Callahan? Because at the beginning of the year, it felt like he was on the hot seat with management saying they were going to hold him accountable, and now it feels like it's different.
Well, I don't think it's any different. They're still going to hold him accountable. I just think that there's more reason in it and patience. And I mean, don't get it twisted. Like, if stuff is just completely wrong, he's going to have to go. But if there's signs, so to me, it's kind of like one of those, like, you ever have like a really pretty girlfriend and
yes,
you want her to like, babe, I just need you to just boom, boom, boom. And she doesn't, you're like, okay, cool, I could keep her. But if she doesn't, you're like, yeah, I know she's bad, but my piece is important. I got to cut ties. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of the situation that they're in.
It's like you're rooting for him, but you're also open to the fact that if you're rooting and it doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, then
it gotta is make what a change. It is. Yeah, yeah.
Randy says, TD, knowing last year, I'd say the majority of the fan base and some portion of the media were shocked that Jeffrey Simmons was not sent to the locker room after throwing a punch in practice. Has Brian Callahan been asked or mentioned anything about how he's going to handle fighting during practice this year? And do you think he may change from last year?
That is a good question. And I will tell you this. I told Callahan, I said, like, that was a missed opportunity, right? And I think for me, like, you're a new sheriff in town. You want to show right away, like, hey, yo, look, man, like, I'm fair, but I'm firm. And I'm not going for that nonsense. I don't care who you are. And I think that was the opportunity to do it, and he didn't. And, you know, you can't go and put the toothpaste back in the tube. I would imagine – I'm actually – look, that's a good question for Saturday. You know what I mean? And he's actually speaking before the practice. That is a very good question. Hey, Brian, how do you plan that to manage things? Actually, you know what? There was a scuffle today. Mason Kinsey and Marcus Harris, they were kind of rolling around on the ground a little bit, and then they got up and parted. But I'm curious, and that's a question to ask him. You know, how would you handle fights if they break out?
What's up with the press conferences before practice, by the way?
I go when they say it's time to go, man. I don't know. I would rather have them after because, you know, that's one of the things. They want you to make sure that you check in with them before you like, look at Jarvis Brownlee. He got hurt yesterday, right? And, you know what I mean? He just was overheating, but it looked like it might have been something, you know what I mean? But then you don't get to speak to the coach afterwards, so you can't get the explanation, so it can – make things a little bit more difficult.
I don't think there's any point to the coach speaking before practice. That's just me. You know, I remember when we were in Minnesota, Vrabel spoke before practice, mm-hmm. and then Treylon Burks got hurt. And it's like, what's the point of the coach speaking before practice?
Yeah,
I don't know. I know that, like, if you're working on a story, it gives you an opportunity to ask a question that's going to the story that would have nothing to do with what happened at practice or not. But, you know, again, this is practice, and most people, you know, are watching practice, and they want to know, like, hey, you know, like, I remember when they scrimmaged the Buccaneers one time, and Logan Woodside threw, like, 5 interceptions in a row. And I asked Vrabel, I was like, what happened? And Vrabel was like, well, it was the last play of the game. So Logan had to throw the ball no matter what. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't mm-hmm. take a sack. He can't mm-hmm. throw it away. He can't. So I'm like, oh, okay, got it. So, like, yeah, Logan Woodside's trying to fit it in there. He can't throw the ball away. He's got it. So he threw 5 picks in a row. Makes sense. But if you don't speak after practice, then you can't answer that question.
Right. And this goes back to what I said about staying even keel, because I don't think you could get too high or too low on any play, because you don't know what's going on in that period. And actually, J.J. Watt had a tweet today about keeping stats. And you know me, I don't keep stats at practice, right? Because you, like his tweet said, you don't know if he's saying, if like Callahan's saying, like, Cam, I know we tell you to read this, this, and this, but we want you to go here with the football, right? Or if he's saying, hey, look, you know, Brandon Allen, I know that you're not supposed to throw the ball here on this, but the way I want the defense to see this, make sure you throw it here. You never know the situation, and that's why you never get too high or too low on stats especially, but overall results of practice.
Well, I would also say, though, it would help as far as contacts is concerned if they would have the coach talk after practice.
Yeah, I mean, look, it could help. It could help. But it also would help if we as professionals understand things that we should understand about practice.
Also, what did he say to you when you told him he missed the opportunity to not throw Simmons out of practice?
It wasn't really much that could be said. He just kind of like nodded his head and, that's it.
Teeny, great stuff as always. By the way, instead of TD on Saturday, he will be TV because he will be all over ESPN.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's going to snow in July, right? TD to Ron Davenport, NFL Live. What? But it's going down, man. Let's do it. I'll be on SC too, the 10 a.m. edition.
10 a.m. Sports Center, NFL Live on Saturday. Again, that's all on Saturday. Tune in for TD. TD, great stuff. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it. Get better soon, man.
Thank you, sir. TD joining us on the program for the TD Power Hour. Speaking of what TD just said, the two TV hits he's going to do, I am actually shocked because I have felt when it comes to Cam Ward that the perception has been a little different. We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman and Company, 102.5 The Game.